παραζηλά. Πες κουνούλτι του αρουβαίου αλριμέ, وهوى كي ليس يغفو الجمال هما في الروح شعر وخيال يا أمان.
So Sina, we are against the we're here to fight a war against the news cycle. Is that correct?
Yes, how do we describe this episode? You initially proposed that we do a year in review kind of timeline episode, kind of retrospective.
Yeah.
And I agreed because it's not a bad idea. It's good, you know. These are, you know, ultimately, these are arbitrary things, sure, like the year and stuff, but like the passing of the seasons, I guess. Like you could just mark a time anywhere and say this is the beginning of year X. Like, we know temporal time is, or linear time is a big fiction, but we go by it anyways, so why not do a year in review? But we spoke this morning and I said, you know, like, I've been thinking about the news cycle and the concept of the news cycle. Mm-hmm. And how it like rules over us, and mm-hmm. the damage it kind of can do, and the sense and the consequences of that. Let me put it in that way. Sorry, I'm going to turn off my fan on my computer. It's really probably very loud. Fan performance silent. Okay, you're going to be silent. I'm going to close this. But I'm also looking at your document now, and it's really good.
So let's do it, and then let's do it, and then critique it. So from my perspective, I was just looking over my own podcast, you know, and what we covered this year. So there is an interesting thing about trying to fulfill what listeners expect. So I get this intuitive sense that people expect me to be able to cover a certain areas, Latin America, South Asia, Palestine. So I always go back to those topics, whatever's going on there. I kind of try to do on the assumption that people are listening for that. I don't know whether they are or they're not. But India's an interesting one, because the end of 2021 was when the Indian farmers had their victory. They've kind of forced the government to repeal a set of agricultural, basically neoliberal cuts to, you know, they were going to get rid of this agricultural marketing system that had, I guess, protected India from famine and protected farmers from destitution. And they figured, obviously, let's get rid of those. and the farmers sat in, you know, they kind of occupied the outskirts of the capital for a long time. A lot of them died in the cold and winter, and a lot of them died in confrontations with police. But eventually the government had to back down. And this is a government that has a reputation for never backing down. What's interesting is we're going to talk a bit about Russia, Ukraine, and India was surprising to me, because I thought of this Indian government, this kind of fascist government, as basically really committed to worshiping America, worshiping the West, whatever the West did. If the West wanted them to confront China, they would. If the West wanted them to make, you know, reforms, get rid of their protections for farmers or whatever other social welfare had existed, they'd get rid of them to favor Western corporations or contractors. But it turns out that they kind of took a stand on Russian energy. So they refused to go ahead with the sanctions against Russia. and they refused to not to boycott. Basically, they were being asked to boycott Russia's economy, Russia's natural resources, and they wouldn't do it. And that really surprised me, because I guess the India-Russia relationship is stronger than I'd calculated for anyway, despite every other hateful
that
thing
there
going
is something
on.
Fascinating about this, because you know, like the we hear the at least someone who's like and I'll admit this myself, like I barely, you know, I don't follow more than, essentially, other than listening to your shows, like I don't follow intensely developments in South Asia, like, because it's like, you know, it's like this thing, you do end up compartmentalizing in your brain the things you consume. I don't know. Maybe there are some people who are kind of global in their diets. I feel like you're someone who is. You're a kind of omnivore, I feel. But that's a different story. But either way, like, from my distance, I kind of wondered about this thing, is that, yes, like, the Hindu chauvinism, the kind of, like, racial or, like, religious chauvinism of, like, the BJP, the brand that he developed and that was heavily criticized, I don't know. I can't personally attest to its, like, truthfulness. Like, I feel like I've learned so many times that, like, so many people, you can say what you want about other countries and people will believe it. So I'm wary now to sit here and say, like, you know, like, anything really about a lot of different countries these days that I haven't, like, studied intensely.
I know what you mean.
But at the same time, though, like, what you heard, especially in those early days, was, like, the Hindu chauvinism, was the anti-Muslim violence, was the sort of general air of, and the liberals are always saying this, the kind of, you know, so of course take it for what it is. But I do have this lingering thing in the back of my head that says, like, you know, this decision to not take part in the American, like, in the energy war and the war on Russia, like, actually, like, is in the interests of a lot of Muslims in India, of all the Muslims in India, in a sense. That, like, in doing that, he pursued their interests. And, like, obviously, like, you know, that's like a silly way of viewing it, because, like, if he were sort of in the American camp and he did pursue this disastrous policy, which seems to be sort of like one of the key, you know, like, engines of this year, of, like, are you going to join this insane cavalcade against Russia or not? And the fact that he didn't join and India stayed. And just stayed in a kind of, like, I guess it's not a non-aligned camp because they are aligned with Russia, but it's more in the sense that India retained its sovereignty in doing so, and it made a sovereign decision in its own interests. Now, does that rehabilitate? Can I say that at all about, like, every other thing about the Indian political context? No, obviously, like, I don't know enough, and, like, I'm not venturing to guess, and I don't want to pass any judgments on anything that's happening in India, but at it from, like, an international relations point of view, like, it's in the interest of Indians for Modi to not align with this insane war on Russia, who, after all, are, like, an incredibly important trading partner for Russia. And in a way, like, American policy has been really beneficial for India, because all of that Russian oil is now being sold through India, right? Like, I mean, India is now a major oil country, even though it never was before.
It's a decision. It's a decision that is hard to reconcile. And it's a mystery to me, because while that happened, and I was watching a lot of Indian TV and a lot of these, you know, these hilarious debate, you know, did I ever send you that Mr. McAdams debate program? So it was this Indian host, and he had like a pro-Ukraine guy, he had a American pro-Russia guy, and then he was orchestrating
that episode,
a debate.
It was amazing.
And he mixed them up. He sort of mixed them up, and so he was yelling at the guy he thought was Mr. McAdams, but Mr. McAdams was on his side. And then the guy was finally said, "I'm Mr. McAdams, and I haven't said a word."
Not worried. Just take a bit of a chill pill. I didn't even address the question to you. Relax. Calm down.
I don't want to relax. No, my country is
well
at
then,
war.
Well, Mr. McAdams, if you are so concerned, if you are so concerned about Ukrainians, then hang on. Mr. McAdams, if you're so concerned about if you're so concerned about Ukraine, get off the fence and send your forces and put boots on the ground. Don't lecture us here in India, okay? I'm not going to hear your lecture. And if you have really problems, go tell Mr. Go tell the U.S. President, Mr. Biden, who flashes. Who flashes his fancy credentials. Don't, Mr. McAdams, tonight. Don't, Mr. McAdams, tonight. Play the cat's paw for the West here. Do not do that. We have no. Hang on. You ask those Afghans. You ask those Afghans what they have gone through falling off planes because you dumped them. You ask the African nations because you dumped them. You go ask millions and millions of Iraqi citizens because you dumped them. You people and your colonial agenda, sir, has wrecked the South, has wrecked the South, has wrecked the East. And don't sit here and lecture us. Don't sit here and lecture us, Mr. McAdams. We shut him down.
I'm not talking. It's the other guy who's talking. I haven't been able to say a word.
Yeah, absolutely. The man has gone completely ballistic. And if he feels so strongly, he should go and fight alongside Ukrainians who are being killed.
I have not, dear host, I have not said a word yet. I don't know why you're yelling at me.
I'm not yelling at you. I'm talking about Mr. McAdams.
I am Mr. McAdams.
Oh.
I am Mr. McAdams, and I haven't said a word, so stop yelling at me.
Okay, sorry. I got that confused.
It's the Ukrainian guy who's going nuts, okay? Not me.
Yes, I got that.
Anyway, my point is that guy, the Indian guy, is very pro-Modi, right? Like, this is the same guy you would listen to saying horrendous anti-Muslim stuff day in, day out. And a lot of these hosts, Arnab Goswami, a lot of these people are saying things that you'd agree with about Russia or about, even suddenly they discover anti-imperialism, right? They discover all kinds of dastardly things the U.S. is doing in the world. But they're neoliberal, they're pro-market, they're, you know.
It's the idea here, though, is that, like, the political formulas we have here for, like, position taking, so to speak, are so rudimentary that, like, people have the neocon worldview etched into their souls, where there's like a one that you, where you have like the American, like, hegemon standing at the top of this thing called the liberal international order, or like whatever you want to fucking call it, whatever euphemism, but really it's the,
and then
like
there's,
the Anglo,
then there's these
it's
authoritarians
like the US
that threaten it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and then the belligerents, and then there are all these kind of like, you know, sort of like X countries or like X factor countries or whatever countries on the periphery of these designations that can be kind of moved or pushed in between through, you know, dirty wars or proxy wars or whatever. And obviously Ukraine was one of them, and it came to a head this year. And it just opened up this wave of truth telling, I feel, funny enough, because in the moment, remember those early days, and like there was this outpouring of liberal, like capital S solidarity in the form of
flags,
in the form of like
the blue and white,
yeah,
the
like
blue and yellow.
that announcing how exceptional it was to have these white, blue-eyed, you know, blonde-haired, like Aryans who are above this kind of riffraff stuff. Like, people were like openly saying this stuff. This was like out in the open, and like this sort of like,
you know, like Iraq or Afghanistan, this is a relatively civilized, relatively European city where you wouldn't expect that or hope that it's going to happen.
These are not refugees from Syria. These are Christians, they're white, they're very similar.
It's very emotional for me because I see European people with blue eyes and blonde hair being killed.
What's compelling is just looking at them, the way they're dressed. These are prosperous, I'm loath to use the expression, these are prosperous middle-class people. These are not obviously refugees trying to get away from areas in the Middle East that are still in a big state of war. These are not people trying to get away from areas in North Africa. They look like any European family that you would live next door to.
Like, and suddenly, like, there were the sort of, you know, the expression, like, brass tacks. Like, you could see down to, like, the brass tacks of, like, international relations and global, like, I guess, geopolitics, in a sense that, like, you could see how the countries that are deemed to be our allies, right, which is another word for saying proxies, right? Like, the U.S. does not have enemy, does not have allies. What is it has? It has interest. What's the famous Kissinger expression? The U.S. does not have allies. Yeah, it has interests or something. Yeah. So, like, these interests take the form of highly performative solidarity. So then all of a sudden, like, you don't hear about Ukraine. And then even though it was engaged in, like, a 7-year long war in the Donbass that claimed the lives of, like, over 10,000 people, like 14,000 was, like, the February estimate. And it's more since then, because obviously the war has continued. But, like, it's always framed through the liberal terms of Russia bad. Like, we've watched liberals, like, fall, like, just tell you how much they love Ukraine. They don't. They just hate, like, Russia and Putin. Yeah, that's the only thing here. And they're happy to, like, sacrifice, like, a large modern country on the crucible of, like, their hatred of this man. And, like, that's what we've watched unfold for 8 fucking months, like, almost 10 months. It was, like, March, right? No, it was May, April. I can't remember. It was like
It was March.
And so like we've watched this thing, we've watched this unfold. It's been insane to watch them. The bloodlust, the like open hypocrisy, the way they excised like Russian cats from the fucking cat federation. like
so
that actually happened.
Yeah, and India, you know, it was strange to see that India wasn't having it, and there doesn't appear to be anything much that the U.S. could do about it, which, you know, takes us to Pakistan, because Pakistan also wasn't having it, right? Pakistan also was not going to join the anti-Russia bandwagon. As a result, I argued on my show, despite some, I suppose, strong reactions from friends, that he got overthrown for it, and that he was overthrown in a coup in April. So I think of that as a pretty clear reverberation, where he said, you know, I'm going to prioritize, you know, the kind of imports that we need, which is energy and food, which is what they get from Russia. And he got a deal to get those at a good price from Russia, and then he was quickly overthrown, right? And I mean, that's Russia-Ukraine reverberating, but of course I also argue that it's Afghanistan reverberating, because a big thing that Imran Khan did, he was overthrown, he was banned from running for office, and recently they tried to kill him as well. So he's still recovering from a bullet in the leg that he got during an assassination attempt a couple months back. And he was the one who basically said, Pakistan's not going to be usable as a base against Afghanistan. And that, I think, was also a major loss, especially once the Taliban overthrew America from Afghanistan itself. So they have no foothold anywhere in Afghanistan or Iran or Pakistan, right? They have no, those were their Central Asian footholds from the 50s on, and they don't have any of them anymore. And so they're freaking out over that, and that also caused them to overthrow the government of Pakistan so that they could get back in. And they did get back in. The U.S. is also using Pakistan again. They bombed Afghanistan from Pakistan, I guess, in July. They killed Ayman al-Zawahiri again. You know, every time they kill him, it's, you know, kind of a big deal, right? They keep killing that guy. And
yeah.